Afternoon, everybody. Please welcome, thank you. Please welcome our DH4 and our O2A team, and I'll introduce them in a moment.
You're next.
Gents are sitting down. And so on your far right, Dorian Walker is the DH4 guy. The two guys in the middle, John Foote, Gary Wycliffe, are his engineer restorer team. And immediately on my left is Bob Schaefer. And he is a commercial pilot and has a vast background with the U.S. Coast Guard. And he is the owner of this airplane right here, which we're going to talk about later. Gentlemen, welcome to Warbirds.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Dorian, start us off. 1917 airplane, and this one is how many? Is this flying?
Not yet. It is about to start its test flying. We're aiming September right now.
Is there a DH-4 flying anywhere in the world?
There's one other DH-4, David, flying. It's in New Zealand.
Tell us about this airplane. What's your passion about old airplanes, this and your Jenny?
Well, our team reconstructed a 1917 Curtis Jenny. And we did it because one day we had a pile of parts in a hangar, and there was some young people that came in to look at this. And I was told that they were really interested, and I couldn't understand why, because it's just like a beached whale, didn't look like an airplane or anything like that. And so we started telling, we did three groups of kids, and I said, well, we must have gotten all the geeks, because they seem to be really interested in this, and not looking on their cell phone or looking at the airplanes in the airport where they're doing it. And so the light bulb went on to all of us that are working on this thing that this is going to be the foundation of what we become Friends of Jenny and flying the Jenny for four flying seasons across America, introducing to America the young and the old of what these beautiful aircraft look like in the sky. So Jenny, we have flown to 14 states. We're the only one in the world to fly cross country. We were asked two main questions at air shows. One is, how did it get here if they didn't see it fly in? And the second was, where did the guns go? And we said, well, the Jenny didn't have guns. It was a trainer. We're all very proud Americans, our whole team, and a lot of veterans in our group. And so we had, about 3 years ago, we had the centennial, the World War I centennial, out on the horizon. And so at one of our board meetings, we said, what would happen if we could tell the entire American early military history? Show the training, the mass-produced Jenny trainer, and then America's first warplane, the DH-4. And the group said, let's do it, if we can find an original airframe. So it took us a little while, and we did.
Where did you find it?
We found it up in Washington State, and it's the last known available original airframe. And so we acquired it. We tried a fundraiser, and a lot of interest, but not enough funds. So a whole group of us here took out a loan because we said, this is really important. And so we borrowed the money to start the production.
You borrowed the money personally to do this?
We a group of us did, yes.
Oh.
It's an important story to tell because it not only salutes those aviators that so proudly answered the call 100 years ago, but as being Warbird number one, it tells the story of all aviators, men and women, all colors, that have stepped into the cockpits to defend freedom across the world. And we think this airplane represents that.
John, you're heavy into caring about young people and the education part of all this. What do you do to get this information to young people so they can digest it and get excited about it?
Well, I personally think that what's missing in aviation is what I call fingers through the fence. We don't have enough kids, enough young people looking through the fence, dreaming of flying. So what we're doing currently, and we had a whole bunch of high school students help on the DH-4, is an internship program. We're working with three local high schools in South Central Tennessee, and even a couple of homeschool families, coming out once a week to help work on the airplanes, learning about the history, learning about the methods that were used, and just trying to get them excited about aviation and about the history of that. So it's hands-on. I mean, they're putting their hands on the airplanes that's you know, 100 years old. It's the history for them. And then that's actually filtered down. Now we have some of the school administrators and some of the history teachers interested in what they're doing and what the students are doing. So
Dorian, in this whole education process, so what are you teaching about the history of the DH-4? and about this model airplane and what those planes did in 1917, 18.
Well, one of the things that kids find most fascinating is on these early airplanes, all of the control, flying controls are on the exterior. So they go and fly a Cessna 150 or 172, and they come and look at this, and they realize this is how aviation began. They can see how the cables work. They can see how the elevator works, how all the ailerons work. And that's sort of the first thing. I think they're also, they're really just enamored with the fact that there's so many wires. They're big, they're kind of cumbersome, and they fly so slow. I mean, there's nothing like, we haven't had this in the air, but I tell you, there's nothing like seeing a Jenny in the air. It is a piece of poetry. And then you realize this also represents a big educational part of it. It's not just about aviation. It's about American ingenuity, entrepreneurship, hard work. All those things that we like to think America is the best at.
Right. The thinking, go back to the history of this airplane. We heard a little bit about it in the video. But talk about what the plane actually did in the air over France and Germany.
Well, you know, when we finally got into the war in 1917, there was no Air Force to mention. There was one aero squadron. They had a group, a bunch of unserviceable, no combat airplanes at all. So a few training airplanes. Congress, it's kind of interesting, Congress appropriated the largest amount of money in the history of the United States to that date to build an Air Force, $640 million. Wow. And with that, I said, let's get going. But building these airplanes, even on an assembly line, was not an easy thing at all. So the first thing that the Warbird did is they put together a committee, as most government agencies do, and they sent them to France and England to say, we don't have time to design an airplane. Let's find an airplane we can adapt to American production. So they looked at the French, they looked at the British, and they found that the de Havilland DH-4, which was very successful for the Royal Flying Corps, was something that they thought would adapt itself pretty well to American production. So that's the one that they acquired. They brought it back, and lo and behold, they found out to begin with, the British don't use inches and feet. So the first first roadblock to the production of America's warplane was in front of them. So they began to make, find ways around that. So when they built them, they got an order, a lot of money, and no engines, by the way. That's another whole story, which Gary can really help you address. But they needed to build an airframe and do it quickly. So they adapted the DH-4. They got an order for a total of about, initially, 4,400 of them. They're from three aircraft manufacturers. Dayton Wright did the most of them. They did about a little over 3,000. And then Standard Aircraft Company did about 200. And then Body by Fitcher did about 800, I think. So of those, about 1,200, as you mentioned in your piece, were sent to France. I think 1,284, actually. So they were then put together, because they're shipped in pieces, and then they were farmed out to 13 Army Air Service squadrons. Five of those were bomber squadrons. The others were observation squadrons. And they went to four Marine Navy squadrons as well to be used as principally as bombers. And those were the ones that were in Belgium, most of them. So they farmed out to these squadrons, generally 16 airplanes was in the squadron, and they began the task of using this guy to defend democracy.
And this was only, 13, 14 years after the Wrights flew.
Absolutely.
And yet
absolutely.
The Italians, the Germans, the Brits especially, and the French were building airplanes.
Yep. Well, think about this. On the bomber version of this, it could initially carry 10 bombs, five 25-pound bombs under each wing. So as anyone that's flown bombers or tested this, you know that when you lose that weight, your aircraft's going to suddenly...
Lurch.
Yeah. So what they developed, another innovation that this airplane's responsible for, they developed a stabilizer that had a trim. There's a big wheel in the pilot's cockpit. It looks like a nautical wheel. And there's a worm gear that connects the worm gear back in the vertical post in the tail fin. And it would allow you to move on set of hinges the back of the stabilizer up or down, depending upon how you needed to adjust it. So there was an innovation that was started on this aircraft that changed the way certain aspects of aviation are done today.
Gary, he mentioned about the engine. Talk about the original engines and about what this engine is and where did it come from?
This engine basically was designed from scratch to power this aircraft. There's two gentlemen was in a motel room in Washington, D.C., and I think in a series of 10 days to 2 weeks.
This is the original engine?
This engine here.
Oh, yeah. This one.
They laid out and designed this engine, and then they started making the molds and the dies to put this engine together. And this engine has been used in, you know, not only this aircraft, but when they got through with flying here, they also used these in a lot of boats, and they put into power units for various applications. The surplus was.
And how much power does this have? How
many? This is 400 horsepower at 1,650 RPM.
Are there any original engines from DH-4s?
This is an original, but it's been completely rebuilt. Yes, there's originals, but they're hard to find. But this is an original engine.
John, what is your role, besides the education aspect, in restoring this airplane?
The easiest way to explain that is I get to make it look good. I do the fabric covering, I do the assembly rigging, the painting, those kinds of things.
Right. Dorian?
By the way, you have to ask John about rigging, because he is, in my opinion, I've flown the Jenny for 4 years. From the test flight on, I mean, the rigging and the things that he's responsible, because I was looking, when our team was looking for someone to do that, I mean, there's, and the Jenny alone, and here there's even greater cable, there's a mile of cable. And if you don't have your stagger correct, if you don't have your incidence correct, if you don't have the tension correct, just think of all the things that can go wrong. And this guy's like a piano tuner. I don't know where he learned it, what he drank or what pill he took, but I'll fly anything he rigs.
Hey, speaking of that, you mentioned first flights, and we know that first flights are a really big deal of an airplane, because who knows? I mean, even with computers, whether it's going to do what it's supposed to do when it takes off. And Edwards Air Force Base, we all know, has lost a lot of pilots over the years, fewer of late, of course, because of computers. But back to slipsticks, slide rules. How many of you here have never heard of a slide rule? Well, there's one. That's okay. But at any rate, first flight's a big deal.